at session number 12289, Reel 1.
Mr. Lord, Reel 1. Please could you tell me how you came to be in the army in the first place and when it was?
As soon as I was 18 years of age, of course, the National Service Act, and along I went to the medicals and everything else, and then it was on the 1st of November 1945 that I actually enlisted at Maidstone.
What was your reaction to being called up?
Well, I'd expected it, and I think I was quite favourably disposed, really. I thought that it was the sort of thing that one did, and everybody had been doing, of course, for years during the war. And I think to a certain extent I looked forward to it. A little apprehensive, perhaps.
When was it that you were called up?
In the sense when I had to first actually report.
Yes.
Well, as I reported Maidstone 1st of November 1945.
What was the procedure when you arrived?
Well, there we all were with our little cases and bags and so on. Rather pathetic crew, I imagine. At the barracks at Maidstone, somewhere around about 11 o'clock in the morning, I suppose. And then we were formed up and semi-marched, walked would be a better way of describing it, I think, to Invicta Lines, which is about 3/4 of a mile along the main road there in Maidstone. And we're then introduced, of course, to our platoons and platoon sergeant and so on and so forth. And the first day was just a matter of preliminaries shown to these double-tier wooden beds with slatted metal slats across them. And then you had to go along and draw a palliasse with straw in it. And it was all a bit primitive, really, but by the time all these sort of procedures had been through and we'd drawn kit, I remember, yes, and uniforms and so on, that was the end of the first day. And then the next day we really got down to it in grim earnest. You know.
What did that involve?
Well, the next day was sort of preliminary drill, and then down to the medical centre where we had jabs for TT and TAB and so on, after which it was very quick, I remember, cookhouse meal, lunchtime, after which we were doubled down to the barracks, changed into PT kit, and had to undergo various tests, sort of mobility tests. You're running around a lot of things and weaving around between one thing and another. And it was after that, quick change back into uniform, you know, ought to be there by now, and so on. And then outside, I remember that everything became extremely swimmy, and I can just remember the sergeant calling out to the corporal, "Catch 'em!" As I had the doubtful privilege of being the first to reel over, and all the others followed. Of course, looking back at it, it was completely mad. Somebody had certainly boobed there, because you don't jab people with several things, rush them to a meal, rush them down somewhere else and put them through physical exercises. That's just not the normal, and in fact I found out afterwards it isn't the normal procedure. The medical officer came, the MO came over, and because I went right over on a lot of asphalt, and of course I was right across my face all bleeding, and several of the others were, you know, so medical officer came over, and his language, anyway, he went off to see the colonel, I understand, and although we never heard anything more officially about it, it was quite obvious that things happened behind the scenes. The sergeant, I remember, my sergeant was very, very careful to see that I went down for treatment at all the right times for my face injury, and so everything was you know, we were fairly well looked after for a couple of days till it had all blown over. And when I went home, actually, he was a very good sergeant. Sergeant Skinner. He was, of course, awaiting demob, and they used to put them on training the incoming youngsters. And he was waiting to go off home to Palmer's Green in London, as he told us. And although he trained and disciplined us properly, he was really a very decent sort of chap, because I remember on the Saturday, we'd gone in on the Thursday, it was always on a Thursday, and on the Saturday afternoon after lunch, we had the first blankoing of our webbing and so on. And well, we all set to. I don't suppose we made a very good job of it, but he came round and he said, "Well, it's a good effort, you've tried. Okay," he said, "get smartened up, put the mirror at the guardroom and get off out into Maidstone for the afternoon, the rest of the afternoon and the evening." That was unusual. You're not usually let out of barracks 2 days after enlistment. And a week later, he made the excuse that he wanted to get rid of our civvies. And he said, "I think the best thing for you all to do is to take your civvies home." And he got everybody 36-hour passes. Whereas the sergeant in the next billet did nothing of the kind, and with the blankoing episode, when he came round to his crew and saw their efforts, he kicked it around in the dirt and said, "Do it again." Consequently, our platoon was a happy one. We'd do anything for our sergeant. And the other sergeant, well, of course, he was absolutely loathed. So that was the first week of 10 days.
You get the impression from some people who give accounts of initial training that there's a great deal of abuse of the recruits, verbally at any rate.
No.
From the NCOs.
We had none. Absolutely none. Sergeant Skinner knew every word there was to be known, and he used it, I remember, because we came back before he realised we'd got there from watching NCOs parade. The RSM took the NCOs on parade on the Saturday morning, and we were watching from the edge to see how drill ought to be performed. That was the idea. But of course the NCOs loathed RSM's parade, and he hadn't finished giving vent to his feeling whilst marching up and down our billet when we got back. But never did Sergeant Skinner ever say anything more than, "You horrible little man."
Why did the NCOs loathe Sergeant Major's parade?
Oh, well, because the RSM used to put them right through it. I mean, in a way that we never suffered, but I mean, his NCOs, he really gave them a pasting, you know.
How did the recruits get on with each other?
Oh, I think I can't remember any squabbling or trouble. I think we were too busy to fall out. I mean, we were all in the same boat, so we were rather inclined to get on with it together. I think it was cool. We were all quite reasonably friendly with each other. I don't think it was much problem.
Were there any recruits who were unable to do what was required of them?
Well, obviously, some were quicker and more efficient than others. I was lucky in having been in the junior training corps at school in cadets, and so that I knew a great deal of what was going on before I even started. Others, of course, had no previous idea about it. And some of them, of course, had very, very sort of tender backgrounds and upbringings, and I think they found it pretty hard. But on the whole, I managed quite well.
What was your next stage?
Well, it should have been, of course, at the end of 6 weeks. We were private general service corps, as it was in those days. And this was the barracks there, of course, were the Royal West Kents. After I'd been through about 5 of the 6 weeks, and doing quite reasonably well, and looking forward to the passing out business the following week, and all the various tests that you would go through, and then posting to your regiment, corps, whatever. They then decided that a batch of us, including me, should go to a physical development centre. In those days, there were, I think, two of them remaining in the country. The one we went to was Storrington, not far from Pulborough, and the other one was up Oswestry. And the idea there, we thought this was going to be good fun, you know, change from purely military things. How wrong we were. A PDC was almost a junior commando course. You really were put through it. You started off, it was a two months course, which involved a whole lot of tests at the beginning, in the middle and at the end, all physical of course, but the main thing was that people were sent there for a variety of reasons. My own was purely that I was a few pounds or whatever it was underweight for what they regarded as my standard, what I should be. No other reason at all. Some people went there because they really had some sort of physical defect. Though only, of course, physical defects that could be put to rights. So you had all these tests, you did physical training, you did runs and walks, and you also kept up with military things. You had drills, you had everything. And then you took all these tests in the various things at the beginning, again in the middle of the course, when you were supposed to improve on the first figures, and then at the end, when you were supposed to be way out and far, far better in all respects. It took a bit of doing. The last thing you did for passing out there, I think it all had to be done in 3 hours. And the first thing was a 2-mile run and walk. Then you went over an obstacle course. You then took another soldier in full kit on your back for 100 yards run, and then changed over and he brought you back. And you then did a 12-mile route march. And that does take a little bit of doing in 3 hours. But I do remember we really felt quite proud when we came back in. We managed to draw ourselves out, tired and weary as we were, and march back onto the parade ground. And the RSM there, who was a guardsman, I can't remember which of the regiments, but... And he actually congratulated us, and he said his guards couldn't have done any better, which was really rather nice, you know. So that was the PDC. And then when you passed out from there, then, of course, you had to go and resume, right from the beginning, your 6 weeks basic training. Not at the same place. You weren't returned. We went up as a course from the PDC at Storrington to Lichfield, South Staffs. And the barracks lay about halfway between Lichfield and Tamworth. And there, of course, we went through the same business again with all the training. And at the end of that 6 weeks, you had a quick, I think, a little week's leave, and then back to the barracks where the postings went up. And I found I'd been posted to the Royal Engineers at Preston in Lancashire.
How did you feel about that?
I wasn't very pleased because I'm not at all a practical kind of guy, and the idea of engineering, about which I knew nothing and in which I wasn't in any way interested, struck me as a rather strange choice. However, it wasn't really quite so strange because the idea was that I eventually ended up as an engineer clerk in Engineer Works Services. And of course you had to be, as a sapper, you had to be trained as a soldier first, a sapper second, and a tradesman third, as the old saying goes, which is precisely what happened. Up there at Preston at the... up at the barracks there. We that was a 13-week course, the SAPA course. And
what type of things did you learn on that?
Oh, it was everything from road building, bridging, knots and lashings and cranes and piping, everything practical, in fact, basically, that the engineers would be expected to do in the field. Mines and demolitions, everything.
Was it well taught?
Yes, I think it was. I mean, at that time, you see, you had most of the NCOs and the people that were instructors in these places were, well, they'd been in the army for years. A lot of them, again, were still would be not far off demob. So they really knew what they were talking about. And its practical application in actual warfare in many cases. So I think really we probably received pretty good training. It certainly seemed so.
Were the sappers a cut above the average in mentality?
Well, not having been to a lot of others, I don't know, but I certainly found the vast majority of them were, yes, I'd say fairly. Yes, fairly well up in sort of educational standards and so on.
And then what?
Well, again, I had interruption because after a few weeks there, I'd been on a 36-hour pass and went to see friends, and the friends in question included a chap who'd just lately been demobbed from the Royal Engineers as a warrant officer, and he supplied me that weekend with quite a few gins, and I wasn't used to drinking gin at all at that tender age of 18. The result was, when I got back to barracks, of course, next morning, I felt like nothing on earth. So no breakfast, reported sick, medicine duties, off we went to do a normal, fairly heavy morning's training in engineering things. So when we got back to barracks, Sapa Lord got a good cold drink of water, I felt so thirsty, of course, and promptly fainted. So I was then ushered into the local medical place, MI room, whatever, and put to bed there. And the medical officer came round during the afternoon, and apparently they'd been having cases of, they'd had one or two cases of appendicitis. And of course he poked me in the stomach and so on, and naturally I was still a little tender in that direction, although there was absolutely nothing wrong with my appendix. And I was then rushed up to a to Whittingham, where it was largely a very big lunatic asylum, but one part of the building was an EMS hospital for the military. And so I got joggled along there in a truck. If I'd really had appendicitis, I think I'd probably have died. But anyway, they said, well, you better stay in for observation for a day or two. Now you're here. And while I was there, I actually did, I don't know what I caught, but something or another. And I was there long enough to be struck off at Preston. I think it was 3 weeks you were struck off, and you had to go, by army law at the time anyway, to a convalescent depot for 13 weeks. And that was at Hereford. That was very nice. We had some nice lines, nice hutments and so on the edge of Hereford. I think it was Bradbury Lines, and I believe later it became the SAS train, or one of their training places. But it was certainly nothing like that when I was there. And we had, well, you just did progressive for longer marches and so on until they reckoned that you were back into A1 fitness. And then it was posting to a different training. Well, actually, to be absolutely correct, in the first case it was number 6 Training Battalion Royal Engineers at Preston, and it became number one training regiment, Royal Engineers, at Morven, because the Corps had been mounted and so on. All the officers had spurs, and we referred to squadrons, and you had to relearn all that with troops and squadrons and regiments and so on. And anyway, that was all right. Now, number one was a very different thing. Number six was a very dreary place up at Preston Forward Barracks. They'd been condemned by Shinwell, and it wasn't really a very happy place. But number one was very tough, and they're always saying, you're now at number one, but it was certainly a very, very good training establishment.
Why weren't they happy in Preston?
I think it's the old thing that if your surroundings, the buildings, where all right, you've got your kit ready for the morning, it's all laid out nice and clean and tidy, and then half the ceiling comes off on it. It was really a deplorable place. Whereas number one was it was one of the hut camps, and in perfect condition, really, that. You have that sort of, I think that helps to make a place happy. And
could I ask you at this stage whether you thought that you were actually going to be used as a soldier for the country in any particular theatre at this time? After all, this was just after the end of the Second World War.
Oh, we knew we could be sent almost anywhere. And of course, at that time, anywhere could mean... and in fact it proved with some of my colleagues, I mean they went out anywhere from Hong Kong, Ceylon, East Africa, all over. Most of the places in fact that had been involved in the war were still receiving reinforcements as they were trained, and as of course the war veterans were returned home for demob. So yes, we knew that we might go almost anywhere, and
did this you think that you might be involved in any fighting?
Oh, well, no, that was over. As far as we knew, that was unlikely.
Not even in any colonial...
Well, most of those things, of course, hadn't really quite begun. It was about a year or so later that these things began to happen. But, of course, in the end, I did get quite close to... nothing that we were directly involved in, but we could have been, and that was it when I got to Greece. Well, that comes later. But at that time, no, really, we thought that, which is what mostly happened, that we would merely go out as reinforcements to take on for a period of, we didn't know quite how long, but 2 years and upwards, to show the flag, hold the fort, and generally keep things going until such time as the British Army began withdrawing from these places.
What was your next step?
Well, the next step then, after leave, that was the Christmas. Now we've got to the Christmas of 1946, and it was almost literally the 1st or 2nd of January 47 that I was posted to a DCRE at Brecon in South Wales. Most of these DCREs were now staffed by civilians who had previously served in the Royal Engineers, and included the garrison engineer for the local barracks and so on. And the idea was that you had 6 weeks attached to learn basically what engineer work services is all about, what they have to do to keep barracks running smoothly and this, so on and so forth. So it was up to it was over to Abergavenny and up through Crickhowell to Brecon, and where the South Wales border is barracks, and I was given accommodation. I was attached, and this is quite important, I was attached for food, accommodation and entertainment. I'm not quite sure what the entertainment was supposed to consist of, but and I never did find out, but the food and accommodation are fairly obvious. But that was all. I had no... they had no control over me, whatever. The DCRE was in charge of my life at that time for 6 weeks. So I duly turned up there, and of course it was at about that time, the winter of 1947, that the blizzards swept across, and we were literally sort of cut off in Brecon at the time. And they'd parked me in a Nissen hut with a hole in the roof. And I remember waking up in... we had no heating, whatever. On the end of the bed, there was actually snow, which had come through the hole in the roof. I thought this was really a little unnecessary. So when I got back down to the... for the morning, to the DCRE... at that time I was with the garrison engineer's clerk, a very nice Welshman who when he found out what had been happening, he said, this is no good at all for a sapper. Sappers have got to be treated better than that. He said, anybody ought to be treated better than that. He said, just wait a minute, he said, I'll get on the phone. I thought, well, now what's coming? He got onto the RSM up at the barracks. And he said, he explained the situation, and he said, now, I'm telling you, he said, you've got a lot of pipes, and you've got a lot of plumbing you need doing up there at the barracks. He said, and there's not a thing going to be done up there till you've got my sapper a proper accommodation. I was a bit dubious about this. It was all right for him. He was a civilian talking to the RSM, but I then at lunchtime had to report to the RSM to see what the great man had in store for me. He wasn't pleased, to say the least, but he did want a lot of plumbing done. So he said, right, sapper, he said, now. He said, you go find wherever you like to go where there's a bed at the lines. You can find whatever you like and move in. He said, but keep out of my way. So I did just that, and I slept easy after that because I got in with the cooks, and I fed well as well. That was the rest of the time there, except for being cut off by the snow, was really quite pleasant. So, there's just one story attached to that. I mentioned that I was not obliged to pay any regard to their orders, and in fact I didn't. It was nothing to do with me. And I used to see an officer, whenever in the morning I was going up into Brecon from the lines, he was always coming down from the barracks to the lines. Nice captain he was, and we used to exchange salutes and a good morning and so on every day. And it so happened that on payday up at the barracks, I was going away for the weekend. I'd got my 48-hour pass, so I was in dress hat and civvy shoes and so on.